from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome in, Preds Insiders, on this Monday evening, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth. Fun show planned here for you this evening. Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet will be joining us here momentarily. Chase McCabe of Darren Donick and Chase will be joining me here as well, as we will react to what Jeff Merrick has to say about his thoughts about the NHL coming back. Plus, what 30 for 30 style documentary do Chase and I want to see done on the Nashville Predators, since everyone has been all wrapped up in The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary on the Chicago Bulls in the 97-98 season and the dynasty as a whole. So we'll get to that with Chase McCabe here coming up later on in the show. Jeff Merrick here momentarily. But first, did you know that on this day in 1998, May 4th, 1998, the NHL announced the Preds as the 27th franchise in league history? Fun fact of the day, 27 years old, the Nashville Predators are, and I wish we were having playoff hockey right now. It sucks that everything has been shut down, and rightfully so. We need to get healthy as a world, but this would have been right in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We would be in round two right now, but hopefully here in the next couple months, we can start getting some live hockey back, and we can start talking about live games instead of past games. And joining us now to discuss this topic is Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us here this evening, and hope you and your family are safe and sound up there north of the border.
Appreciate that, Ryan. Same to you and your family, your listeners and your listeners' family as well. I hope everyone is safe and healthy and making the best of an unprecedented situation in our society right now.
So we've heard NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman be optimistic about the NHL returning at some point this summer. Are you optimistic, Jeff, that there will be a Stanley Cup winner at some point this summer?
I'm not, but this is a situation, Ryan, where I really want to be wrong. Like, there's some, because of our egos, we always want to be right about everything. Oh, I knew this would happen. Like, I would take no delight in the NHL scrubbing the season and the playoffs just because I don't see a pathway to get there. I would take no joy out of that. This is a situation where, you know, the only joy that I could take out of this situation is if there's a Hail Mary pass that gets caught and someone hits the end zone with the ball and we're playing hockey again. I'm only too happy to be wrong. I don't think I am with this one. This isn't exclusively the NHL's decision. There are, you know, various levels of government and certainly health authorities hold all the cards when it comes to this. But I think, Ryan, what the NHL is trying to do is, you know, make sure that if they do get the green light, that at a moment's notice, they are ready to go and have their players set and have the infrastructure ready for, you know, turning on the NHL tap as soon as the following day, you know, the next day after sports leagues get the go-ahead. But Am I optimistic about it? No, but again, I really hope that I'm proven wrong here. I'd be the first to celebrate my ignorance.
So, Jeff, do you feel that way because of maybe not ever getting the green light, or because the logistics, if they get the green light, could be too difficult to execute?
I mean, I maybe I'm just looking at it, you know, too simplistically here, but, you know, until there's, you know, effective immediate testing and a vaccine, I'm having a hard time, you know, swallowing the idea that, yeah, let's go play some hockey here. And we see the numbers continuing to increase. Many are saying the worst in all this is still yet to come. And I don't know, maybe I just read too much news. Maybe I just follow too much online. And maybe better to be blissfully ignorant about the whole thing. But I've got a couple of close friends that work in the medical community here just outside of Toronto, and they say, I can't even believe that you're even entertaining the idea of even discussing coming back. So maybe call me cynical, but I still don't see a clear pathway for this to resume. Having said that again, Ryan, like, I understand why the NHL is going through these steps. I understand why Major League Baseball are going through their steps. I get all of it. I'm just skeptical whether we're ever going to be able to get there to salvage any type of NHL season.
Sure. So let's hypothetically say you're sure. Bang on about this, and that this is the equivalent of a Hail Mary to try to get this season finished if you're the National Hockey League. Do you feel like it's good for Gary Bettman to come out almost on a weekly basis and give some optimism to the fans and to the teams when at the end of the day it may all be for naught?
You know, it's a good question. I'm always in support of, you know, more transparency, more of the commissioner keeping not just the teams updated, but fans as well. And right now, you know, there's no point in the NHL going silent, and there's no point in the NHL shutting this thing down prematurely. I'm sure they have a drop-dead date in their mind, and we're not there yet, so there's no reason to shut it down right now. I think you give as many updates as possible. You talk about what the first program is for NHL and its players, and that's quarantine. And then you move into the second stage, which is players getting together in smaller groups as far as workouts, and you build it out from there, knowing full well that this could be halted at any minute, that at any second this could all be over. But you do go through those steps. So I think it's a good thing that we hear from Bill Daly right now. I think it's a good thing that we hear from Gary Bettman right now. I think that naturally their opinion has to be optimistic. Although I'm sure, you know, behind the scenes there's a lot of skepticism and concern about finishing off a regular season or going ahead with the playoffs. But as far as them providing information or making themselves available, I think it's a good thing that they're out there each and every week. And whenever there's a new development, the one thing I'll always give the NHL credit for is Gary Bettman gets out there, and so does the Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly.
So Jeff, let's also hypothetically go along the lines that you're bang on this, and that we don't get NHL back this season. How detrimental would that be to the league if that happens?
It's awful. Like, it's just from a monetary point of view, it's probably, geez, Ryan, what do you figure, a billion, maybe a billion and a half dollars? Say nothing of, you know, what are all sports going to be like when this is over and it's safe to go back to the arena, or it's safe to go back to the Diamond, it's safe to go back to the stadium. Like, how much disposable income are people going to have? How safe are people going to feel getting together once again? So that's, you know, a question for another day. But I mean, immediately there'll be less hockey-related revenue in the system. So that's bad for all 31 teams in the NHL. It's bad for players. They hate the E-word, escrow, and where escrow, I think this year is in the between 14% to 16% range. I mean, various modeling has it perhaps going up to 35%. If the entire, you know, the remainder of the regular season and the playoffs are scrubbed. So you consider if you play say you play for the New York Rangers, for example, and half your paycheck is going to state tax and 35% is going to escrow and another 5% is going to your agent, all of a sudden you're looking at your check and you're saying, I'm only taking home 10% of my pay. How is this worth it to me? The bad situation for the players, and by extension, that's a really bad situation that the league finds itself in. So it is no surprise that the NHL is trying, you know, their best to make sure that if they do get the go-ahead, they're going to play hockey, try to finish the regular season, and try to get the Stanley Cup playoffs in as well, because there is just too much on the line here otherwise.
Well, the internal optimist in me is having my fingers crossed almost 24/7 that not only we can get NHL back, but just sports back as a whole. I think that would be just great for the morale of for the morale of Canada, for the morale of the U.S. It would be a huge shot of adrenaline for everybody.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Although I still do think that sports and schools probably come back last in all of this. But listen, I love your optimism, and I want you to be right. I am on Team Ryan in this one. I want you to be right on this, bud.
Well, I'm usually on Team Jeff Merrick, but I hope you respect that. I'm hopeful that you're wrong through all this. So, Jeff Merrick,
I have no complaint. No complaint about that.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet here with us on Preds Insiders. Jeff, for Sportsnet, what has this been like for you guys throughout this entire process? Just like that, the snap of a finger, everything comes to a screeching halt back in early March, and haven't had hockey for close to 2 months now. What has this been like for the network?
We're all learning about broadcast apps. We're all working from home. I mean, all of television production has been shut down, so no control rooms, not going to studio. It's a lot of vintage games and highlight shows as far as television goes. But as far as digital and radio go, you know, we're still doing a daily Hockey Central program in Toronto. We're all broadcasting from our homes. I use a tie line box for a clear line from my office to the radio station for that. We use various, you know, broadcast apps to do podcasts, broadcast apps to do, you know, video for digital, doing Instagram live shows. So essentially, that's funny, I was having to talk with one of our programmers this morning, Ryan, saying, you know what, it kind of feels like this is a sort of broadcast R&D camp. Like we're learning how to do things differently using different types of technology. And now my question becomes, Ryan, when this is finally over and we are allowed to go back to work, how does this change all of us? And how does this change the nature of how our business runs now that we all know how to use these things remotely? Is there even a necessity for going back to the bricks and mortar building to do broadcasts? So be curious to see what sticks. But yeah, right now it kind of feels like we're going through a research and development camp as far as hockey broadcasting goes.
Well, I know at 102.5.
See what works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at 102.5 The Game, we're having similar discussions of, you know, I know the state of Tennessee is opening up in select areas. Hopefully the city of Nashville here in the next week can do so as well. But, you know, do we continue having our shows remotely through the summer? Yeah. You know, the shows have been going off really smooth, and you know, there's no need to all get back together all at once just because the mayor says we can. So,
I agree. Well, you know what, though? I do think for the purposes of radio specifically, I still do cherish the idea and still think that it's important to have as many people in the same room to produce a better conversation for listeners, just because you can tell, you know, just something simple as who's going to talk next or who wants to make a follow-up point. It's tough to do it like when you're in three different or four different locations. And it's a lot easier than just, you know, it's a lot easier when you're all in the same room and you can just sort of put your hand up or have like some type of, you know, inflection, you have some sort of, you know, way of indicating that you want to ask a follow-up question instead of just stepping all over each other, which is my specialty, by the way, Ryan, stepping on your co-host.
Well, I think there is something romantic about being able to do this from your home and kind of humanize everybody. You know, the shows, we're all in studios most of the time, but to relate to a listener who also is working from home and doing Zoom meetings and doing everything remotely, it is kind of fascinating for the radio world to take that step into that world and have the listeners see that as well.
I think there's an understanding there too on the listeners, on listeners' behalf. Like certainly when I listen to radio now, I'm coming at it with the idea that none of these people are in the same room. All these conversations are happening hundreds, if not thousands of miles apart between people who can't communicate other than what you're hearing on the air. So I think there's a lot of grace that listeners are giving their broadcasters right now. Because to your point, you know, everyone needs right now to get into a different rhythm. Everyone needs to get into a different pattern. We're all learning how to do things differently. And I think a lot of people, I think the majority of people, Ryan, are cutting everybody a lot of slack because of it.
Jeff, before we let you go, a lot of us are in, you know, kind of memory lane mode, and
yeah.
Fox Sports Tennessee has been replaying the 14 victories of the 2017 Cup final run for the Nashville Predators, and they just started it last week. So this week they finished the sweep against Chicago in round one. And, you know, everyone here in Middle Tennessee views that as the most epic two-month sports run this city and this region has really ever seen because of how unexpected it was. And this city has seen a Super Bowl run and saw another great run with the Titans back in January, but there was something unique and something special about this town coming together on, you know, on Broadway to watch games together. From your perspective, north of the border in a hockey-craved nation like Canada, what was that run like back in 2017, seeing Nashville do what they did?
To be blunt, it was cool as hell. It was cool as hell to watch. Like you crave for markets, you know, to represent their fan, to represent their city, to represent their state, and just be honest about it. Try not to be something that they're not. And, you know, the Smashville is great. Like the hockey vibe was different, and the hockey vibe was cool. And just even just watching, you know, watching the games on television, you know, the minute you watch the Preds game, your first thought is, man, how do I get there? A, Nashville's a great city. B, would love to, you know, just to be there to be part of the party. But C, man, I want to go to one of these games. It's like all of a sudden, like I've always maintained a hockey fan. What you need to do, like every hockey fan has to have the Montreal Canadiens experience. You have to be at the Bell, at least once in your life, if you're a hockey fan. You have to be at the Bell Center on a Saturday night at 7:01 when, you know, the lights go down and you start to feel the ghosts of the old Forum and Coldplay hits and you get the shivers and the chills and the ghost of Maurice Richard and Jean Beliveau and the greats that have come before. Like, honestly, it is like no other experience in hockey. So that's one box that I think all hockey fans need to check. The other one is going to a game in Nashville. And 2017 really cemented that. If you're a hockey fan, you have to make sure that that is a destination for you. And I think it was 2017 that completely put Nashville on the map as far as being a place that hockey fans need to get to at some point in their life. You know, during that run, during the Anaheim Ducks series, which was fantastic and nasty and violent and great, I was in Windsor for the Memorial Cup, and I was out with a guy named Scott DeMore, who's a professional wrestler. And we were out for dinner, and I was texting with Eric Young, of course, big Nashville Predators fan. And, you know, he was going to that final game, and all that Scott could try to figure out was, okay, because Eric's like, hey, man, I got another ticket. Can you make it down here? And all that Scotty could try to figure out was, how can I get on a plane? Like, how quickly can I get on a plane to get to Nashville? Because everybody in hockey wanted to be at that game, that last game between Nashville and Anaheim. So honestly, I can't underscore enough how much that run did for putting Nashville on the map as being a destination, as being a hockey destination in the 31, soon to be 32 team NHL universe. I can't express strongly enough how all of a sudden Nashville became the coolest place to watch hockey.
Yeah, that you put it almost perfectly. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about some of those moments inside that arena and around the arena on Broadway, of the scene of just gold filling downtown Nashville on the entire afternoon of the first ever Stanley Cup final game, that game three.
Dude, hang on. The side stories to get there. You mentioned Chicago, and that series was a bonanza for Nashville, but how great did you feel for Colton Sissons in the hat trick game?
Oh, I blacked out. I blacked out in section 304 when that goal went in, because you knew what that meant with about 5.5 minutes left in regulation.
Yeah, it's great. The Ryan Johansson injury is a tough one. That first goal in the Penguins series getting called back was a tough one for Nashville as well. But great run, great market. Listen, I'm a big fan of that organization. Put it this way. Every interaction that I've had with the Nashville Predators from day one has been first class, and I'm not in the minority there. Everyone that deals with the Preds and deals with hockey people in Nashville come back singing the same song.
For that playoff run specifically, how much of Canada's investment level in what Nashville was doing was related to PK Subban being on that team?
I think it didn't hurt. I think there was a lot of it. With Subban, of course, you know, playing in Montreal as much as he did and being a headline maker from coast to coast to coast in Canada, I think that was part of it. Like, I think that was, for a certain amount of hockey fans, that's what got you to Nashville. That's what got you to watching Nashville Predators games. But after that, there was just so much about this Preds team, you know, whether it's Forsberg or Arvidsson or Pekka Rinne or, you know, the rest of the murderer's row you guys have on the blue line there. Like, Subban may have been the on-ramp to get there, but that highway was long and littered with great hockey players and great stories. So, you know, Subban may have got you there, but, you know, the Predator team itself gave you a lot of reasons to stay.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet has been our guest here on Preds Insiders. Jeff, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. Stay safe and stay healthy, and hopefully we're watching hockey sooner rather than later.
Amen. I hope you're right, as I mentioned earlier on. And yes, best to you and your family, Ryan, and your listeners and their families. Be safe, be healthy, be happy. Fingers crossed. We're all hoping Ryan's right here. We get hockey back soon. All sports, for that matter.
Great stuff there from Jeff Merrick, as always. Jeff Merrick, one of the best in the biz. He has an extremely busy schedule, even during COVID-19, even during this pandemic, and I certainly appreciate him joining us here on Preds Insiders. And interesting perspective on the National Hockey League. I think a lot of people are split on whether or not sports as a whole, let alone the National Hockey League, will come back at some point this summer. There's a lot of logistics to figure out. But as Jeff put it, he thinks they're even going to struggle to get the green light to even go down that road, not only in the NHL, but all sports as a whole. Hopefully, as he put it, hopefully he's wrong, and we can, again, get hockey back, get sports back at some point, even if fans are not in the stands. Also, interesting perspective on how he remembers that 2017 Nashville Predators Stanley Cup final run. Fox Sports Tennessee rerunning all 14 victories from this playoff run. Certainly a joy to go back and walk down memory lane of rewatching those games. Tuesday night, it will be game 3 of the Chicago series in 2017, in which Kevin Fiala won that game in overtime. One of the most memorable nights in Bridgestone Arena history. You've heard me talk about it before. Man, that was such a fun night inside Bridgestone Arena. So can't wait to watch that one again. And then Thursday night will be game 4 when the Preds complete the sweep of the Chicago Blackhawks. Joining us now here on Preds Insiders is my co-host on the rundown, and it is Chase McCabe, also of Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase, how the hell are you?
Hello again, everybody. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. This is the second time we have discussed something on the air today.
I know. We do that from 9 until 10 on the rundown each day, but happy to do it again here on Preds Insiders and talk a little hockey because I miss it so much.
I know. Dude, it's been close to 2 months. I'm going through hockey withdrawals. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've been going through sports withdrawals in general, but we should be in the playoffs right now, you know. You and I both have gotten to go on the road for the playoffs and how fun that is. And so it's like I'm just kind of sad.
I know. This would have been right around middle of the second round. So, you know, if the Preds were fortunate enough to, A, make the playoffs and, B, get past one of the top teams in the Western Conference, then the Preds would be playing playoff hockey right now. But here we are.
Yeah, so the show goes on, as they say, and that's what we're doing. And you've done a fine job of holding it down with Preds Insiders through all of this. So looking forward to – and look, there is news. I mean, there's constant conversation about what could happen and what's going to happen. So looking forward to it.
Well, there has been a lot of conversation, and Gary Bettman has kind of been at the forefront of it. He's been vocal with Sportsnet a couple weeks ago, with NHL Network last week, about the NHL's desire to come back and the fact that they're going through some plans. The New York Post came out over the weekend and said that the latest plan has the NHL finishing the regular season and the postseason in each team's barns, in each team's arenas, and not doing the four hub cities because of concerns that the players would have about not seeing their families potentially for months at a time, which I would say is totally valid from the player's point of view. But Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, who we had on here earlier in the show, is not as optimistic that something is going to happen with the National Hockey League in terms of finishing the season.
I would take no delight in the NHL scrubbing the season and the playoffs just because I don't see a pathway to get there. I would take no joy out of that. This is a situation where, you know, the only joy that I could take out of this situation is if there's a Hail Mary pass that gets caught and someone hits the end zone with the ball and we're playing hockey again. I'm only too happy to be wrong. I don't think I am with this one. This isn't exclusively the NHL's decision. There are, you know, various levels of government and certainly health authorities hold all the cards when it comes to this. But I think, Ryan, what the NHL is trying to do is, you know, make sure that if they do get the green light, that at a moment's notice, they are ready to go and have their players set and have the infrastructure ready for, you know, turning on the NHL tap as soon as the following day, you know, the next day after sports leagues get the go-ahead. But am I optimistic about it? No, but again, I really hope that I'm proven wrong here. I'd be the first to celebrate my ignorance.
So that was Jeff Merrick earlier about how he's pessimistic more sure. than he is optimistic about the NHL coming back, and it led me to ask him a follow-up question of, well, do you feel like it's kind of unnecessary from the NHL to be talking about all this optimism when in the end it may all be for naught, all of these different plans that are being bandied about?
Well, and I think it's a fair question, and his answer was also fair, and I'm starting to, the longer this goes on, the more I'm going to be pessimistic like he is and think this probably isn't going to happen. But I understand why that they are feeling this way, why they want to get it back, because there's so much money involved. You know, we talked to Matt Duchene on the Rundown a few weeks ago, and he brought it up. It's $1 billion. And let's play hypotheticals for a second that they don't get the season back and they lose all this money. It's going to hurt them down the road. It's not just right now. They're not wanting to get this back just to have right now and crown a Stanley Cup champion. They know that there's a trickle-down effect with money and that it's going to catch up to them down the road. And they just added Vegas a few years ago. They're adding Seattle. I mean, the league is healthy. They want to stay healthy, and losing this type of money is going to be tough. It's going to be hard on not just the NHL, but the NBA and the MLB and MLS and maybe the NFL if it affects them. Everybody that is losing time and money right now, I mean, they're going to be paying for it for years to come. It's not just in the present. So I get it, but I'm kind of with Jeff Merrick that now I'm getting in the point where I just have to see it to believe it.
Well, yes and no. The fact that the NHL and the NHLPA came out last week and said that they're going to basically start this phase one process, that they're in phase one, and they could potentially get to phase two by middle of May. And then you have John Scott, former NHL player, tweeting out that he's hearing from different people, different NHL players, that they're targeting June 1 as a potential date to get back into the facilities. Elliot Friedman, who comes on your show every Thursday at 1 o'clock, saying that he's heard from different NHL players something of the like that John Scott has heard. So I get where you're coming from, and I get where Jeff Merrick is coming from, but I have to think that if things start trending, or continue to trend, I should say, continue to trend in the right direction with this, and the curve is flattened, and they can get by with this, I have to think they're at least going to give it a shot. Now, whether or not they actually get through without having something disastrous happen or having to then repause the season or repause the playoffs, I get that concern as well. But there is so much money at stake for the National Hockey League that it would be huge. I mean, we've talked about this on the rundown of what league could be most affected if they don't come back, and your answer was the NHL.
Yeah, because it's so healthy, and it has been over the past few years, that I feel like this will stop the momentum, especially with as much money could be lost, could be involved in this between the players and the owners. So that's why I'm so concerned about it. I understand that they're taking the steps, and we've heard the reports that they could be close, and right now everyone's feeling really good, and they should. But the things that concern me are like something we talked about on Darren, Donick, and Chase earlier today. Darren was saying that Samerly Parkway in Smyrna was just like it normally is. People were out and about over the weekend. It was packed.
Yep.
Restaurants were open and packed. I am scared that we're going to rush this thing, get back to normalcy, and then be back in the same boat a few months from now because it's going to flare back up again.
No, I'm totally with you. We're still in the late third quarter, early fourth quarter of this in terms of doing the right things to social distance and take every precaution. If we blow this fourth quarter lead, then it's not going to be good. So I think we're all guessing. Jeff Merrick is guessing. You're guessing. I'm guessing. We're all guessing as to what's going to happen with the National Hockey League. But I think we would all agree that the money at stake is too much for them to concede the season until the very last second that they have to make that decision.
Yeah, and look, if this comes down to the buzzer, then I'm totally fine with that. I kudos to the NHL for doing everything they can, because again, this is all unprecedented and an area, a place that we've never been in before, and hopefully we're never in it again.
Yeah,
but like I look at now, and this could be, just bear with me, this could be a bad example, but you reopen a city, okay, and we all get back to somewhat normalcy. I think there will be a new normal, but we get back to that. In a few months from now, it flares up again, and we're forced to shut back down. Now, that would hurt, that would suck, but we would have no choice. We would have to do that. The NHL can't do it again. Like, once they start back up, if they get shut back down, that's it. That's ball game. So
mm-hmm.
I think that that's why they're waiting and playing, letting this play out as much as possible, while also listening to the health experts and the city governments and trying everything that they can to adhere to all of that. So it's a lot more complicated sometimes than I think we really give it credit for, but that's just kind of why we're in the position that we're in. So I would love for Jeff Merrick to be wrong. I would love for them to start playing again, and we're talking in June or July about the Predators in a playoff run. But again, I just kind of have to see it to believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully everyone continues to take proper precautions with their health and with the social distancing, and it's really physical distancing. And the more we can do this, I know Mayor John Cooper is starting to be about to be more optimistic about entering different phases. Bill Lee, our governor, has opened up different parts of even our Middle Tennessee region. But like we've said, cannot get back. We cannot rush back in this thing, because if we rush back too soon, then the results aren't going to be good. Not only for sports, but just society as a whole. Chase, the NFL earlier today announced London games will not happen. And we all know the NFL loves going to London, but they have canceled those games for the 2020 season. NFL going to release their schedule later this week. I wonder if the NHL is looking at that announcement of the London games not taking place in September or October or November, and saying, you know what, I don't know if it's worth having a global series overseas in which the Nashville Predators are scheduled to be a part of in October against the Boston Bruins in Czech Republic.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, but you know, this is just, again, to use the cliche, this is the world in which we live, that some of these things that we never really thought about were gonna have to be moved or postponed or canceled even, now they are. And so, I mean, you have Nashville that has canceled a staple in the CMA Fest that happens every summer. It's not going to happen this year because of everything going on. And so that's just the way it is. The NFL is making the right call by not going to London, because it would, even if everything is just magically fine by then, it's still too soon, because you never know that something might pop back up again. So I think it's the right move. The NHL, I would imagine, will have to make a similar call, even though it could be further down the pike. I mean, it would be further in the year, and things could look different by then. You have to plan these things so far in advance with the travel that I could see them making the same move, and it would be the right move, and hopefully they would consider the Predators and reschedule it a year out.
You know, I'm sure they would. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, one thing we talked to Butch Spiridon today from the Nashville Visitors and Convention Bureau that is so tough is, you in your head you might be like, okay, well let's just reschedule everything next year. Well, things are booked years in advance. Now, I don't know if something like this with the NHL is done that way, so it probably could be just pushed back a year. But the NFL draft, you know, they're going to give it to Vegas, but they have to wait 2 years because they've already scheduled next year in Cleveland. So I know it's something they all have to work through, and it's new territory, but it still stinks that it probably won't happen next season.
I mean, if the NFL isn't going over there, then I would be shocked if the NHL has their global series over there. And even if they were to reschedule it at some point else within next season, that doesn't make sense, because it's going to be a condensed schedule anyway if they finish this season, because then they're going to have to start the next NHL season in November or December, and then who knows if there's a second wave at that point. So there's just a whole lot of unknowns with everything going on in the NHL and in the sports world as a whole. So Chase, at 102.5 The Game, throughout these quarantine days, we've been doing a Twitter question of the day. And today's question was, what 30 for 30 style documentary would you want to see done on the Preds or the Titans? And this is obviously coming up because The Last Dance on ESPN has been so good. Everybody has been so glued in on it. And if they were to do, if 30 for 30 were to do something on the Preds, what documentary would you want to see done on this franchise?
Well, the first one that comes to mind would simply just be the whole process of bringing in David Poile, and then David Poile's, just following him around and in the history of David Poile with this franchise. We all know about his history in the league, whether it's with the Atlanta Flames or the Washington Capitals, but just centered around how it came to be and what some of the early conversations of building this thing from the ground up were like. So that would probably be the first one to me.
You could do one on the Poile family legacy as a whole.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. With his dad and now Brian coming into the fray. So you could certainly do that. The second one would be the first season, the 98-99 season, the very first one for the Nashville Predators, of even the summer before, and getting the arena opened and putting the ice down for the first time, all those things. But some of the footage of the first season, because I know there's a lot of it, that would be something I'd want to see. What are some that you have?
All right, so I listed six of them. One of them was the Poile family legacy. That was number six on my list of six. So number one for me is Jim Balsillie's failed attempt at buying this team and moving them to Hamilton.
Yes.
That is number one on my list, because this city almost lost its NHL team because of that clown. And he raced, talk about jumping the gun, like we just were about coronavirus and getting back to some level of normalcy. Jim Balsillie jumped the gun and started selling season tickets before he had the team. And he was selling the season tickets in Hamilton, Ontario, where he wanted to move the Nashville Predators. And the NHL came in and said, no, Craig Leopold as well. And the Predators stayed here in Nashville. So see if there was behind the scenes footage of everything that went down there, I would love to see a Jim Balsillie failed attempt at bringing at buying the Preds.
That's a good one. That's a really good one, because that was such a weird, And to be honest with you, and I almost hate to admit this, but I know there are a lot of people in this market that probably will. But before that time, I had gone to one game. I knew they were here. I wasn't really a hockey fan. And when all of it, when they started reporting, oh, the Predators could leave, I feel like a lot of people go, wait a minute, no, you can't take our team. Mm. And then all of a sudden they got interested. And look, it saved the franchise. I mean, we all remember the rally and the sign, get your damn hands off my team, that Gover made.
Yeah.
You know, it woke people up, so to speak, and then the new ownership took over and what they've done, Sean Henry, of course, being brought in, that changed a lot of things. But almost losing the Predators almost ignited a fan base that we ended up seeing grow by the thousands just 3 years ago when they made that run. I've gotten a lot of memories on my phone in the last few days of 3 years ago, and yep, that has been a lot of fun.
It absolutely has. So the Jim Bosselli failed attempt is number one on my list. Number two is Alexander Radulov's controversial time in a Preds uniform.
One of the first, I think that was, one of the first press conferences I got to cover was his return and his first practice when he came back after the trade deadline that year. That was one of the first things. I got to skip class because I was interning at the radio station. Hmm. My teacher was like, this is such a great opportunity for you to be able to go and cover that. So he let me out of class and didn't count it as an absence so I could go cover it.
Oh, look at you. Skipping school, for a press conference.
You know it, for Radulov.
But you know him coming up as this huge prospect in the Pred system. He was a first round pick. He was lighting it up in Milwaukee, and then in November, or I think it was October of 2006, gets called up to Nashville, and you can just see a star in the making. He has a great season in 07-08. His second year, and then it was in that summer, in the summer of 2008, where he defected to Russia and went to the Continental Hockey League and took everyone by surprise. I mean, it was completely out of the blue that Radulov decided to do that. And then he comes back, like you were mentioning, back in 2012, in March of 2012, where they're down the stretch, and the rumors had been swirling all season long that this was going to happen. And I was actually sitting at Bridgestone Arena at the Sweet 16 when Cincinnati, or the second round, when Cincinnati beat Florida State in the NCAA tournament to advance to the Sweet 16, when that news was starting to break that Alexander Radulov was indeed coming back to Nashville for the stretch run and the postseason to finish out his contract, because he had 1 year left on his deal. And that was his time to finish it. So he comes back and then has the incident in Scottsdale with Andre Kostitsyn. And then the Preds lose that round against the Phoenix Coyotes, and that was that for Alexander Radulov in a Preds jersey. So I would love to see that entire story documented with behind-the-scenes coverage, both Stint 1 and Stint 2.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Because that was such a – and he's still – I don't know if he's still as controversial as he was. You know, when he first came back, you know, people still let him have it, that first game with Montreal when he made his return to the league again. But, you know, I think people have kind of moved on. But you do wonder of what the franchise would have looked like had he stayed the first time, because he was such an up-and-coming, talented player that they were trying to build around. What – you know, how far would they have gone with him had he stayed?
Well, look, he was a young player on a rookie contract on a team that could use a young star on a rookie contract because they were so strapped with resources at that time. And when we're talking about the summer of 2008, just 1 year removed from them having to do the whole fire sale where they trade Scott Hartnell and Thomas Vokoun, they can't re-sign Paul Kariya or Peter Forsberg. And you have this young, gifted player that just ups and leaves. Well, the 08-09 season, they struggled offensively. They were inconsistent. I would venture to guess that they probably would have made the playoffs in 08-09 if Alexander Radulov had stuck around.
Yeah. No, I definitely think they would. And you also wonder, because one thing we always bring up with this franchise is, where's that game-changing superstar? Could he have been that? Had he stayed consistently in the NHL and gone up against that talent night in and night out and been developed here, I really do think he could have been. I think, and I feel like, too, that he probably looks at it, and I've heard him say this, that he has some regret, that now, looking back, he wishes that he had stayed. He made money, got paid, but, you know, I think just staying here could have been better for his career.
Well, and with Radulov, he was a game changer in the 2008 playoffs when he took out Jason Arnott in the corner after Arnott scored the big goal in game three. To take the lead with about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes left. Yep. And he tackles Arnott in the corner and concusses him.
Yep.
Alexander Radulov.
I remember that. Another one for me real quick, Jordan Tutu.
Yes.
Being the first player of Inuit descent to play in the NHL, his battle with alcoholism and everything that he went through off the ice, of course, losing his brother. That, you know, all of that could be in this and becoming – really the first true fan favorite, homegrown fan favorite of this franchise, and being one of those players that you saw a ton of 22 jerseys and heard the 2-2 whistles, and you still do whenever they bring him back, or even when he was an opponent until he went to Chicago, but he would come back, and even with Detroit, I would still hear some of the 2-2 whistles, but just his popularity, I think that would be fascinating.
I would agree. That was on my list. A couple others, the Weber for PK trade, yep, and how all of that went down at the draft, where that conversation was hatched between Mark Bergevin and David Poile, and then arguably the biggest trade in NHL history, maybe even sports history, at least a one-for-one trade. That is a moment, Chase, that we will always remember where we were. We were here at the radio station. And also on my list, the summer of 2012, where Ryan Suter left for free agency and the Philadelphia Flyers put an offer sheet on Shea Weber, and how that summer then made Roman Josi kind of into what he is, because that opened up the door for Roman Josi to take the next step in his career.
Yeah, and I also have one on Barry Trotz, because I think you have to look at him and the fact that he lasted 17 years here as the head coach after never having been a head coach in the NHL. He was given a shot, and many viewed as, okay, it's just a bad expansion team, you know, starting from scratch. This guy will be there a couple years, and then he'll get fired. He even thought that. I mean, I don't think he ever dreamed it would go the way that it did. And I just – it's a fantastic story. And then going on to win the Stanley Cup with Washington, got to do something on Trotzy.
Sure. That's a good one. Well, that's all we have for Preds Insiders this evening, Chase. I appreciate your time, and I will talk to you again tomorrow on The Rundown.
All right, dude. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it as always.
Absolutely. Well, that's Chase McCabe of Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game weekdays 10 to 2. You can also catch him with me weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. on The Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, and thanks to Chase McCabe for joining me here on Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio. Keep it locked on ESPN 102.5 The Game.